For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, which is actually the 250th. Yes, that's a quarter of a thousand. So thanks to everyone for being with us on this journey, including a friendly wave to viewers in Indonesia who've made it number 45 on our all-time list of views by country, which makes us happy. Followed by an exasperated effort to wave off climate alarmists who are never happy. For instance, according to The Guardian, on whom one can always rely for sober, balanced, and sanity on an issue, quote, climate crisis on track to destroy capitalism, warns top insurer, end quote. And since The Guardian hates capitalism, you might think they'd finally found something to like about climate change. But no, these people are never happy and very rarely right. In this case, the nonsense their environment editor is peddling is that, quote, the climate crisis is on track to destroy capitalism, a top insurer has warned, with the vast cost of extreme weather impacts leaving the financial sector unable to operate, end quote. Oh, really? Well, no. As Roger Pilkey Jr. has pointed out repeatedly, if you look at the cost of extreme weather not in absolute terms, but as a share of inflation-adjusted GDP, it's falling and has been for years. So the entire premise is bunk. Still, in for a pound, in for a handful of pennies as well, right? So let's see how much else they can get wrong. For instance, that climate change is currently raising insurance costs. We suppose they're right that, quote, the world is fast approaching temperature levels where insurers will no longer be able to offer cover for many climate risks, said Günther Dollinger on the board of Allianz SE, one of the world's biggest insurance companies, end quote. That is, we suppose they're right that he said it, but not that it's true. And indeed, not that the fact of him being on the board means the company said it. And remember, there's a world of difference between companies refusing to offer insurance for certain specific things, like homes built on floodplains, and the entire global system of mortgage financing grinding to a halt. Indeed, in that case, if governments had not systematically been sheltering homeowners from such risks, also known as protecting fools from their own folly in return for votes, then patterns of urbanization in many areas would be different than they are. Likewise, if municipal authorities had worried about runoff instead of getting distracted by exotic issues while paving everything, then wondering why rain was pooling in cities in ways it didn't used to, we would again be in a different situation with respect to insurance. And as we at CDN have pointed out, it's telling that flooding is getting worse in many cities, but not in nearby rural areas. As with the urban heat island, it's clear to a sane observer that what you have is a local effect due to urbanization, not a huge trend due to climate change. And now, a word from our sponsor, which as always is you. Because at the Climate Discussion Nexus, we don't get lavish government money. We're not backed by huge foundations. We're crowdfunded. We're dependent on your one-time or monthly contributions, including now the thanks button on YouTube, if that's where you're watching us, to put out the newsletter, to make these videos, and to keep pushing back against climate alarmist idiocy. I actually think the battle is going quite well, but it's not won yet, so please help us push on to the finish line. Now, of course, given the mysterious anti-freedom tilt of the environmental movement generally, and its climate alarmist subset particularly, we understand when they do find capitalists apparently endorsing their point of view, they feel vindicated. But there's a difference between welcoming support and hallucinating it. And thus Scientific American bellows, quote, big banks quietly prepare for catastrophic warming, end quote, when in fact, big banks do not prepare for catastrophic warming, quietly or otherwise. That piece is full of the usual lurid hype typical of an Antonio Guterres or a pre-jihadi Greta Thunberg, and it blames Donald Trump, of course. And then it goes giddily off the deep end. Quote, the stunning conclusion indicates that the bank believes the planet is hurtling toward a future in which severe droughts and harvest failures become widespread, sea level rise is measured in feet rather than inches, and tropical regions experience episodes of extreme heat and humidity for weeks at a time that would bring deadly risks to people who work outdoors, end quote. Yeah? What bank document says any of this? There's one from J.P. Morgan Chase & Company, which they do eventually link to, but it doesn't contain the word hurtle. As a climate report, it naturally expresses some sensitivity to the worldview and investment concerns of its more net-zero-inclined clients, though interestingly, it insists up front that, quote, we don't boycott, and also that, quote, we believe in free enterprise, end quote. but it then talks about potential risk in subdued and prudent ways. Okay, not entirely. It does actually outline a stress scenario based on RPC 8.5, but it talks about severe weather in cautious hypothetical terms, including mentioning that, quote, financial losses due to severe weather events have not been material to the firm, end quote. It never alludes to harvest failure or crop failure. It does not mention, even as hypothetical, sea level rise in feet or extreme heat. And it definitely doesn't contain the word deadly. As for Morgan Stanley, the piece eventually mumbles that, quote, Morgan Stanley's climate forecast was tucked into a mundane research report on the future of air conditioning stocks, which it provided to clients on March 17. A 3-degree warming scenario, the analysts determined, could more than double the growth rate of the $235 billion cooling market every year from 3% to 7% until 2030, end quote. So, rapid growth in the air conditioning market in the next 5 years and 8 months is the apocalypse? The scientific alarmism piece also claims that, quote, the world is not on track to limit temperature rise below 2 degrees Celsius, and limiting warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius is almost certainly unachievable, the Institute of International Finance wrote in bolded text, end quote. But actually, it was a Sustainable Finance Monitor newsletter from that organization's Deputy Director of Sustainable Finance, its Senior Policy Associate Sustainable Finance, and its Managing Director and Head of Sustainable Finance. In short, they're resident climate obsessives. But of course, if the bankers didn't say it, they dang well should have. So Scientific American says they did, and trust readers not to follow the links, which we did anyway. Oh, and speaking of tossing gold bars off the Titanic and missing the lifeboat, Climate Change Dispatch informs us that, quote, a battery recycling company that the Biden administration urged to apply for a $375 million green energy loan in November warned investors this week that it's at risk of going out of business, end quote. So, there's money well hurled. Also, Climate Depot reports, somebody got to the EPA Museum, a monument to Al Gore that somehow cost $4 million to build and $600,000 a year to operate, despite filling only a single room, which actually was sufficient to accommodate the trickle of visitors. Oh, and speaking of never being happy, Heatmap says the stock market took a hit, quote, because of anxiety about what the Trump tariffs will do to economic growth and electricity demand growth as a result, end quote. Which they ought to think is good, right? Fewer power plants running is what Heatmap wants, right? What's more, they also say, quote, Trump's tariffs are a catastrophe for the oil industry, end quote. So why aren't they happy with them? Meanwhile, the spin cycle churns out, quote, why climate change could ruin your next vacation, end quote, from Climate Cosmos. Oh, teacher, we know. It's because you could spend it reading panicky hype about implausible scenarios instead of relaxing and enjoying life. Or because you could get cornered by a sea level rise boar on the beach, right? No. Instead, the piece starts, quote, weather, once a reliable factor in planning vacations, is now a wild card, end quote. Right. And no one ever camped in the rain unexpectedly before 1988. Ah, and from the Wake Us When It Doesn't Happen file, quote, experts say the Gulf Stream may collapse sooner than expected, end quote. Mm-hmm. And when is it expected to collapse? Any day now, or maybe it collapsed a century ago, or who knows? Anyway, worse than predicted, and less than credible. In the newsletter, we again note that supposedly it's spring, despite various local headlines of the, quote, Arctic air will spill onto Ontario with possible 15 to 25 centimeters of April snow, end quote, variety. And, with a seasonal upsurge in wind, comes the seasonal upsurge in claims that windstorms are proof of man-made climate hysteria. For instance, Matthew Wielicki notes that, quote, it's tornado season again, end quote. So, gotcha? Well, no, since actually Wielicki says it's tornado season again, quote, and still no EF5, end quote. Despite which, look for predictions that 2025 will be worse than the worst thing ever, and then, if it's not, either awkward silence or hollering, next time for sure. While we wait, the New York Times warns us that, quote, the next generation of American scientists is losing faith. Small world, isn't it? In his farewell address, Dwight Eisenhower famously warned that, quote, "The prospect of domination of the nation's scholars by federal employment, project allocations, and the power of money is ever present and is gravely to be regarded," end quote. And indeed it happened. So, if today Americans are losing faith in the research industrial complex, there might be reasons other than Orange Man bad. In keeping with which, if climate alarmists want to keep, or regain, the public esteem that they enjoyed when Michael Mann was young and litigious, they might want to think about which of their claims are increasingly causing people to snort with laughter, rage, or both. For instance, from Clean Prosperity, the stale chestnut, quote, "Tackling climate change will boost economic growth," end quote. To which the hoi polloi increasingly retort, "Then why does the opposite keep happening? And why are you as smug as you are wrong?" In the newsletter, we then turn to our next Look It Up on the perennial topic of Arctic sea ice, which we have already discussed in this series. But this week, we focused on the Canadian Arctic because the records there actually go back to the early 1970s. You may have seen graphs of disappearing Arctic sea ice, all of which seem to begin around 1980 when modern satellite coverage begins. But there are strong hints that the data from the 1970s shows much lower coverage. For instance, Tony Heller has pointed out that the first IPCC report in 1990 showed very low Arctic sea ice in the 1970s, but then subsequent IPCC reports, again, drumroll please, adjusted the record so the 1970s ice coverage became high relative to later decades. Oh, there's a big surprise. Unfortunately, they forgot to tell the Canadian Ice Service, whose data are online in case you want to look it up. And, to save you the effort at least initially, we did it ourselves, and here's what it shows. This graph is total accumulated ice coverage in percent terms from September 3 to May 14 for each year from 1971 to 2024. And note that the blue is actual and the gray is interpolated, so there's more than a little uncertainty here. But even so, you can see that the percentage ice coverage in the Canadian Arctic in the early 70s was low compared to the entire interval afterwards, which matches the raw satellite record for the entire Arctic. It's one of those inconvenient truths that are out there if you know where to look it up. Also, we recently reported on a study of a century's worth of Spanish rainfall records that contradicted climate model projections that rainfall should be trending down. And in this week's newsletter, we reported on a new study in Nature by a team of dozens of scientists looking at long-term rainfall records from across the Mediterranean. The study begins, quote, "State-of-the-art climate models project a substantial decline in precipitation for the Mediterranean region in the future," end quote. But when they put together the largest and longest Mediterranean rainfall data set ever assembled, running from 1871 to 2020, they found that despite significant variability, there were no trends up or down either annually or in individual seasons, nor were there trends in droughts. Even so, the authors found half a loaf for the modelers, which is prudent if you like getting grants. Finally, we normally retrieve food from the CO2science.org archive, but plants serve lots of purposes, including, of course, supplying fibers, of which Gossypium hirsutum L, or cotton, is obviously a key one for durability and comfort alike. And from 1987 to 2017, 43 studies found that an extra 300 parts per million of CO2 boosted cotton yields on average by 56.5%, while one study found an extra 600 parts per million boosted yields by 27%. So, CO2 helps us grow more food and more cotton to wear while harvesting or eating it. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I actually like being happy.
That's right.